Brad McCott, a director of the Dyke Grant Awards. I'd like to welcome you to our 10th annual awards ceremony. And as is our tradition, I would like to introduce you to the 13 nominees for the 2014 Dyke Grant Awards. Emily Carroll. This is where Emily's supposed to come up.
Okay.
You went over this then.
And in the 90s,
9 years since we've awarded, I count, two dozen of these lovely trophies to the scope of established and up-and-coming cartoonists. And when I think back, the first year we had Seth and a baby-faced Brian Lee O'Malley win in our two categories at the time. And then since then, we've awarded trophies to up-and-comers like Keith Beaton, Michael Ford, Jillian Marie Tamaki, Alex Fellows, and even really. And it's great to see those people at the very early stage go on to do such fantastic work. And also every year we've honored Canadian comics history by inducting a cartoonist into our Hall of Fame, Giants of the North. Some of these are well known, like Lynn Johnston and Terry Mosher. Others are less known, but just as deserved, as Peter Wally, Albert Chartier, or this year the Canadian Whites. But the best thing that we may have accomplished personally is helping to revive the reputation of Doug Wright himself. Wright, who died in the early 1980s, reigned supreme in Canadian magazines and newspapers for more than 30 years, thanks to his Nipper and Ben Wright's family strips. The strip, which was wordless, which was a trick to appeal to English and French audiences, was a fast success, spreading across the country, and even the papers in America, Britain, Australia. His weekly dispatches of family life made me sweet and bittersweet, and were enjoyed by thousands of commiserating parents and kids. But in 2005, when we were thinking about starting up this awards organization, his audience was small and shrinking, with the generation enjoying his comics and getting older. And then 10 years later, it's really nice to be able to listen to the radio and hear Doug Wright's name come out. It's really kind of become synonymous, I think, with excellence in Canadian comics, and I'm proud that that's an achievement in its own right. The strip stands as beautifully wrought vignettes of domestic life that continue to be enjoyed by readers thanks to these reprints by John Gordon. Now, I'm sure if he was here today, if he was still around, I'm not sure he'd know what to make of some contemporary comics today, which deal at times with subject matter that probably never even been spoken of in polite society, much less depicted in comics. But I think, I know, that he would be aware enough to recognize and respect the hard work and professionalism and dedication that all our nominees have shown. He was, above all, a proud Canadian and a cartoonist through and through, and I know he'd be proud to see how much his views grow and matured. And if I talk about Doug, I can't do it without talking about Phyllis, his wife, who is here. She's also our official trophy presenter. She comes in every year, and we put her to work, which I guess we have to do. She's been with us since day one, before day one, actually, when Seth and I went to visit her in Tiltonburg in Ontario to get her on the award show and a possible book about her husband. I've never asked her what her first impression of us must have been, but she gladly opened up her house to strange men, gave us lunch, and exposed us to this wealth of art that she had from Doug. And it just really knocked us on our heels, and we couldn't have been more grateful. And I think I speak for Seth and everyone involved in the organization when I say that we appreciate your support, your trust, your forbearance over the years, and we're glad that she's with us with the past decade, and we're grateful for the grace, dignity, and class that she brings to our event each and every year.
Lucky man to be able to get paid to do something he loves. The real Doug Wright's family sincerely hopes that all of the cartoonists nominated tonight will be able to say the same thing. On behalf of my mother, Phyllis, and my Nipper brothers, we all got Nipper all the way through school, and our families, a good luck to all the nominees, and welcome to the Giants of the North Hall of Fame inductees tonight. Thank you.
I guess I should let you know. Borealis is gone. I've closed up the factory. Not that you can. Does he understand what I'm talking about? Do you even give a shit about any of this? You understand, once our spare parts are gone, we're finished.
Who are you even talking to? I looked back up 10 minutes ago. You were so boring. I'm so tired of talking about fans. Can we talk about another kind of fan? Maybe the fans of my graphic novel, The Hall of Atlanta? If you get enough of them in a room and you have to wave their arms, that'll keep you cool too.
Thank you for your touching concern.
Very casual includes short comics gathered from Michael DeForge's prolific career in one handy and deeply unsettling collection. These include stories about litter gangs, meat-filled snowmen, mystical urban deer, and the peculiar yet very recognizable beagle human pipe.
My mother was a beagle.
Is it difficult?
I can't move my arms mostly. Well, a little bit, but not much. Somebody help. I was mugged by a group of college students.
Well, the good news is equitable. The bad news, well, according to hospital insurance policy, we aren't allowed to treat animals in buildings, so we had to surgically remove the part of your body. It's very traumatic for them. I can refer you to the families.
We have a new member joining us today, guys. Slater, let me introduce you to the rest of our little circle. Adam, Louise, John, Lil Sissy Brohead, and Scott.
I'm so confused. I mean, whatever happened to simple superhero stories, or how about a Cowboy Indians comic? Remember those? That would be so refreshing. A good cowboy, bad Indian. In Paul joins the Scouts by Michelle Rabagliati, it's summer 1970, and Montreal is in the utter fear as FLQ bombs are going off around the city. Paul, meanwhile, is more interested in comics, flying his kite and landing his first kiss. Along the way, he discovers the Boy Scouts, sparking an experience that will change his life forever.
There's Patrick! He's wearing his uniform. I guess he's on his way to Cub Scouts. Let's go spy! I am knowing he's stopping to get Mark. And we're headed over to the school. I can see everything from here!
Pack! 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 Cub gear!
Wow!
Hello, boys. We're happy to see everyone again. You look like you're all in great shape. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Raymond. But forget my name, just call me Akela instead. I've got two other friendly jungle animals to help me with this big job. There's Laurent, our chaplain, a.k.a. Grey Brother.
Hello, boys.
And then there's Scott, or Bagheera, who's a real help in a pinch.
Oh, come on now. I'm not here to touch this.
Yeah, I'm smoking again. I'm addicted to cigarettes. good to them.
She stands at the night sky, watching the stars, praying for a sign, believing nothing but desperately invoking alien spacecraft to appear, or even shooting the star that she could lie to herself about. Anything so she can have her old life back. Nothing comes that easy. Nothing comes at all.
Hey, lady! Everyone's crazy! I should know! I just broke the hell out of them!
Alien Probing, anal joke. Isn't that clever? Clever I am. Combining Michael Soto with aliens and their anal probing skills. I must say, kudos to the aliens. They taught me everything I know. Well, welcome to the awards. You've already been welcome, Brad. That was a welcome what you did, right?
Yes.
You told me it was a welcome.
Yes.
And then you went up and did it anyway. I warned you, but you didn't listen to me. And you said that you should be up there first. And I said, fine. You hung yourself last year. But apparently, this is a room full of masochists. And people enjoy that. The Doug Wright Awards, people, for comic books and graphic novels. I mean, that's where people don't dress up. That's an award. I remember when they were planning the awards, like, how do we make this award show for comic book artists and graphic novels nerdier? How do we do that? How do we do that? Make it super nerdy. Well, we won't have a dress code, number one. We'll encourage people to come in shorts. And then we'll have it at 7 p.m. Oh, that's crazy. 7 p.m. Brad, what are you thinking? 7 p.m. So you're home for, you'd be home by 10. Home by 10. What's on at 10? Home for Bones. Home, you need the time for Bones. Is Bones on a Friday night? What's the Stargate, SGI, home for Stargate, 10 p.m. It's always on. I don't really have a speech or anything this year. I just thought I would sort of like ride the goodwill from last year. It's not working. I'm not riding it. I'm not feeling it. I'm missing someone. I'm missing David Collier. Where the hell is this? There it is. Here. You terrified me. You learned how to tone your performance down. Where did you study? You must have been studying at the, I don't know, Rosie O'Donnell Manners School. What does that make sense? She had no manners. But are you up for anything this year, David?
Pardon?
You're not up for anything, are you?
No.
And you notice there's no couch here. Remember last year? That was a big mistake. There was a couch up here. Remember that? And that's why you took advantage of our couch. There's no comfort. Brad said, no comfort, there'll be no place for me backstage, none. You huddle behind huddle there. You come out when I tell you. Hey, man, I'm just talking to the men here. Did anybody use the men's washroom at the end there? You see what they have at the door? Ridiculous. You see that? A little thing that said, protect yourself, open the door with this tissue. Honestly, I'm outraged. There's a little thing there. You've all got to use it. Come on, this is a room full of enlarged prostates. Come on, guys. You can go during the ceremony. You've got to check it out. A little tissue. You pull the tissue out, and then you open the door. And then what? But then the garbage can for the tissue is back in the washroom, so you've got to open it back up again. hurricane with your tissue and then deposit it, but then you've got to get another one. So it's this constant Moebius strip. You're just constantly going in and out. It's like, you know, pushing the rocks and looking, you know, with the rock up to the, you know. Get that guy. You're all scholarly.
Sisyphus.
What's your who?
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus. Well, no, I'm serious. I'm not mocking you. I'm mocking me. I'm mocking myself. I'm thinking of the guy who rolls the...
pushes the rock up the hill for eternity.
What was his name again?
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus, yes, that's right. He was right. There was no need to be like that. I, metaphorically, I've been rolling up this career constantly to the top of the hill, and then I do something and it collapses and I fall down again. But it keeps me fresh! I wanted to talk about... And I wanted to talk about my meeting with Stan Lee. Because this is... I met Stan Lee twice, and they're very auspicious occasions. And I mean, he's obviously someone that you all know. And I wanted to tell this little story. The first one was... it was about... it was 5 years ago. And I had my graphic novel at Comic-Con. And... I just recovered from cancer, so I decided I would attend the Comic-Con in underwear. And then that makes sense, right? Because I felt I was being reborn. So I decided I would go as my character, Danny, and I went in underwear, and I went all around Comic-Con just harassing people. And I found Stan Lee, and he was being feted by, there was a huge camera crew around him, and there was a Japanese anime booth, and I just... plunged into the middle of it, screaming. I mean, this is... And Stan Lee, I practically gave him a heart attack. I held my eyes really wide open. I go, look at me! I'm an anime character with giant eyes! I don't look remotely Asian! I'm a white with my red hair and no pubic hair! It was horrifying, people. I horrified him. It was borderline racist. It was just... Then the second time was a little better. About 3 years ago, I had a chance to make it up to Stan Lee. But he didn't remember me because I was in character. I had a mustache on during that. But we were at Catalina Island and there was a film festival and I had a short film there. And I was with a friend of mine, an old boyfriend of mine who's much younger, like 15 years younger, really buff, really sexy, really handsome guy. And but a comic, but, and I shouldn't say but a comic book fan, as if those two can't be. Oh, I just said it, they're mutually exclusive, didn't I? Horrible! I'm a horrible person. Yes, he was a built, beautiful comic book fan. In other words, he had no need to be a comic book fan. He did it because of this love, pure love. He wasn't driven to it by his physique. It's what I'm saying. Is that what you people want? You want bullshit? Is that what you want from me? I'm a mirror to you, comic book world. So Stan Lee's there. We want to meet Stan Lee. We're on the red carpet. And so Stan, you know, Stan, we're really big fans. And he wants to, so he wanted to do a picture with us. So we get on both sides of Stan. And I don't know what we were thinking. But we both put our arms around his waist, under his jacket. I mean, that is something you do not do to a man from the greatest generation. So we're two men, and we put our, I don't know what we're thinking, we just put our, under his jacket, and he's a slender, good, he's in good shape, but I could feel his 81-year-old flesh through his very thin shirt. And we're both grasping his waist, and he goes, whoa! Where are you, a couple of Playboy buddies? Whoa! And then he looks at me, and he looks at my much younger friend, and goes, what are you, mother-daughter team? And that was my second meeting with Stan Lee. And we kept our hands there because it was too late. Are floating around the internet with a mother-daughter team grabbing Stan Lee and going, whoa! Anyways, that was my story of me and Stan Lee. I'm going to get going with the award show. That was enough of that. But I want to say I'm very happy. I mean, I don't know, you're probably Hannibal. I'm on Hannibal, and it's back, and I'm very thrilled. Yesterday was better. It's great. I'm very thrilled because I get to continue my friendship with Lawrence Fishburne. I don't know if I spoke about him. I'm having a bit of a bromance with Morpheus. It's amazing. I don't know. It kills me. He recently took me to see a UFC fight. Imagine, me and Lawrence Fishburne go to a UFC fight. So we're at the very front, and I was just like, the men were naked, and they were barefoot and sweating. I was out of my mind. And Lawrence turns to me and goes, "Want something to eat?" And without thinking, I go, "Yeah, two hot dogs." Two hot dogs down, and that's when they choose to put us up on the Jumbotron. He was homosexual. Two hot dogs down his throat. Besides, Lawrence Fishburne. And then on the Jumbotron, I'm not even identified. Lawrence Fishburne, unidentified gay friend. In my own town, people. My own town. We went and saw, he took me to a very, it was a very straight thing we did together. So I took him in a very gay thing. We went and saw Sandra Bernhardt together. Lawrence Fishburne and I went and saw Sandra Bernhardt. Because he heard me talking about her. He's like, "Oh, I'd love to see her. I love her. I love her." I'm like, you love her? That's crazy. He's like, "Ah, she's great." I go, "Lawrence," he goes, "I want to go with you." I'm like, "What? People will talk. If you and I go to see Sandra Bernhardt, that's pretty gay. I mean, two men having sex is less gay than two men going to see Sandra Bernhardt." I said, the only thing gayer than two men going to see Sandra Bernhardt is two men going to see Kathy Griffin. And he goes, "I'd rather suck your cock." People, that deserved a lot more. Anyways, we're going to move on to the awards. Our first award tonight is the 2014 Pigskin Peters Award, which recognizes in the best in experimental or avant-garde comics. Named after a popular character in the Canadian comic strip Bird's Eye Center, the award is a tip of the hat to non-traditional or non-narrative work. The award reflects this. It comes in the form of a bowler hat, as you see there. Wait, are you going to model it, Brad? Oh, you're just there. Just.
I was told to do something.
What are we told to do?
This.
Oh, way over there. You've got. Were you playing radio?
I'm everywhere.
Okay. In the form of a bowler hat, which is fitted to the winner's head, and comes with a plaque that doubles as a hook to hang it onto. And the finalists for the 2014 Pigskin Peters Award are Connor Willemson. Is that right, Willemson?
Yeah.
For Calgary, Death Milks a Cow. Midway through Willemson's unique story, a Calgary businessman is texting while driving with someone named Lady. But the road is oddly deserted. The businessman is being spied on, and the lady is actually a cow. We all know about that. We've all been on those trips. Whose brain has been hardwired with cutting-edge technology. Willemson's near-future plot is bizarre, but emerges if given the attention that this masterful artist deserves. This is Willemson's second Doug Wright Award nomination. And our second nominee is Seth Scriber for Flexible Tube with Steak Lines. That is quite a title. Rube Goldberg has found a worthy heir in artist Seth Scriber. Like Goldberg, Scriber loves making comics about unlikely contraptions. In his latest comic, an unseen inventor builds a gadget out of tubes, wires, and mysterious jars that evokes an emotional response in those who smell it. This comic captures the poetic quality of everyday objects being put to unusual ends. That sounds very dirty. This is Scriber's second nomination. Senator Julie Delporte for Journal. Autobiography usually entails a tell-all account of the author's life. But in Journal, we only ever catch the barest of glimpses. Notes written in spare moments, feelings plucked out of everyday life. There is something beautiful and refreshing about the sparse details that Delporte's words and drawings depict that allows us to identify with her far better than a typical tell-all ever could. This is Delporte's first nomination. And the next nomination is Emily Carroll for Out of Skin. Emily Carroll. She's known for making horror comics that are as creepy as they are lovely. But Out of Skin experiments with the comics form to an unusual degree. The online comic cascades on the screen at a queasy pace that would be impossible offline. Beneath a wintry light, Carol's folktale setting concludes in an insidious transformation. This is Carol's second nomination. Is Michael DeForge for Very Casual. This book is also nominated for Best Book. Very Casual belongs in the experimental category as well, thanks to its scope and vision. A collection of short comic stories, the character closest to DeForge's heart may be a single, lonely basketball player who is just as eager to experiment with her sport as he is with his comics. With his strange, misshapen characters, and his story's arcane logic, DeForge is certainly out to puzzle us. But he does so with such weird, original humor, we can't help but be charmed. This is his fifth nomination. And the winner of the 2014 Pigskin Peters Award is... Not you? I was thinking that this is an obvious fix. You're giving it up. Emily Carroll, brother!
But in Emily Carroll's able hand, it is. Out of Skin mines the best that gothic horror and online comics have to offer. It combines black, white, and red into a lovely, winding horror story that scrolls vertically, scene by creepy scene, to its inevitable conclusion. Filled with sylphs and specters who whisper into the main character's head, and also have a way of entering into the reader's head as well, Out of Skin is as lovely and horrifying as it is visually inventive. It's also addictive, leaving the reader craving for more of Carol's singular visions. I'm speaking not just for the Monument Committee, but also for myself, that I look forward to seeing more of Emily's work. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Okay, now, I've been looking over these names, and they're very difficult to pronounce. So I'm thinking that I might just ignore this next award. It's all about making me comfortable. And I don't really feel comfortable saying these things. So I don't tell people don't mind. Maybe there's another way around this, Brad. Because I mean, and some of Brad's prose is a little purple. I just can't get through it. I just can't actually pronounce it. Maybe, you know what? Did you think maybe, Don McKellar, are you in the room? Don McKellar, people, give it up. Don McKellar.
Thank you.
So would you take this over for me?
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, thank you. John Keller.
Thank you.
It's so great to be. Some of you know you veterans. I was a host in past years. 10 years of Doug Wright. It's amazing to me, and so many familiar faces. Great to see them. And so many people who were there nominated very first year. In fact, basically it's the same people nominated year after year. So let's face it. Makes it quite chummy. Thank you, Scott, for praising my pronunciation. I'm proud of it. You've done some great pronunciation tonight, all the way already. As you know, there are a lot of Brad's prose is notoriously difficult to pronounce. And cartoonist names are also often very tough. That's why Seth dropped his last name. But who can forget some of the pronunciations I gave when I was host? Brad, roll the clip.
There's no clip.
There's no clip. You mean this thing isn't even recorded? Okay. I'll just read it then. Here we go. These are the finalists for the 2000... Excuse me, I'm just going to... I have this false tooth, and I feel it's blocking my pronunciation of it. Do you mind? The lighting's so bad up here, I don't think it's today. I had a dental accident during the week, so I think there might be a little whistling sound, but I think it's better than the lip than I had before. All right, are we ready to begin? Here we go. The finalists for the 2014 Spotlight Award are... Connor Williamson, already well pronounced by Scott.
Thank you.
Connor Williamson for Calgary, Jeff Nook, the Cow, Treasure Island, Moon Path, and Passion Fruit. Williamson is the kind of cartoonist who can create intrigue in something as simple as a couple spending the day together, bickering, Skyping, and snacking, as he does in Treasure Island. In another nominated story, Moon Path, he's equally adept at mind-boggling narrative, layering action on top of action in a story about doppelgangers and drug use. All this, plus he draws like a dream. Nice one, Brad. Dakota McFadden. Thank you very much. For other stories and the forest you wrote in on. In this collection of comics, McFadden manages to reveal unexpected patterns in the design of a Nintendo game, in the behavior of crows, or the regular routine of I stumbled a bit on the pronunciation of a word. I apologize. I'll continue. The regular routine of bus riders. This Toronto cartoonist's workaday world is full of ordinary folks, but it's also filled with cowboys, ghosts, and gnomes. And other hidden wonders lurking just below the familiar surface. This is McFadden's first nomination. Patrick Kyle for District Mover and New Comics. Yes. Kyle is a master of building entire worlds out of abstract doodly shapes and figures. The characters in New Comics show off the freaky wall hangings, precious vases, and alien landscapes, while Distant Mover sends us off to far-flung planets. Yet,
His story seems still rooted in a simple love for art and the ways that art can seep into everyday life, even if that life becomes abstract and doodly. Patrick Kyle. Stephen Gilbert. Actually, I'm pretty disappointed these are fairly simple names to pronounce. Thank God. But Stephen Gilbert for the Journal of the Main Street Secret Lodge. A proud son of Newmarket, Ontario, Stephen Gilbert chronicles the sordid history of his hometown in loving, excruciating detail. In this, his first graphic novel, Gilbert uses old-fashioned cross-hatchings to reveal a Newmarket that is part small town, part Old West, and deeply involved, packed with small realist touches. This book marks a return to comic-making for Gilbert after a 15-year hiatus. This is his first nomination. And finally, Georgia Weber. Well done. Done. What happens when a chatterbox is forced to take a holiday from speaking? These charming comics recount the struggles that Weber endures when a doctor tells her that she needs to take a break from talking to save her vocal cords. Told in a clear line, black and white style, and a sure-handed use of red, Dumb is a series that speaks volumes about the power of words. This is Weber's first nomination. And the winner of the 2014 Spotlight Award is... Here we go. Stephen Gilbert!
Spoiled brats of American Idol. security, because you'll be a big dance star at the end of it. But you know what I mean? Just show so much you love dance. I hope that came up right. Okay. As tonight's winners have already shown, the Doug Wright Awards exist to recognize the accomplishments of contemporary cartoonists and to encourage the art of cartooning in Canada. But an important part of the Doug Wright Awards looks back to this country's cartooning past. Tonight, we call attention to milestone achievements in Canadian cartooning as we induct the newest members into the Giants of the North. We, the Giants of the North! I love that. And that is a great ad to wrap this up, by the way. Anyway, sorry. The Canadian Cartooning Hall of Fame! To speak about this year's Giants of the North, please welcome one of the founders of the Nelvana Animation Company and co-author of the groundbreaking history, The Great Canadian Comic Books, Michael Hirsch.
Thank you, Scott. And, it's a pleasure to be here today. It brings back memories of some 40 years ago when we first started working. We being Patrick Rivera and myself, we started working on the Great Canadian Comic Books, which was the history of Canadian whites. And the Canadian whites were the Canadian comic books that were published during World War II. And Canada had an interesting policy where we restricted non-essential goods from entering the country during the war to help the war effort. And we had entered the war before the United States. And so American comic books that previously had been coming across the border, the kids were used to reading Batman and Superman and the comic books of that era. And those books weren't coming in anymore. And some enterprising Canadians organized the creation of some Canadian books. And those Canadian books pretty quickly became black and white because the cost of printing them at the time would have been ridiculous for the cost of a comic book. So essentially, a new industry was born in Canada, and one that created great characters like Nelvana, the Northern Lights, and Johnny Canuck, and Nitro, and many, many other characters, Fizzy Dawn, just to name a few. What we got turned on to the story through Captain George Henderson, who had a comic book store, a comic art store on Markham Street as part of the Merbridge Village. And George suspected that he knew who had the archives for these comic books that were done during World War II, particularly one company, Bell Features. And so at the time I was writing, I was interested in the history of these books. And in speaking to George about it, he said, why don't you contact this guy, John Ezrin? He won't admit it to me, he said. But he thinks he has the rights to the books, and he thinks he has the archives. And so I did call on John Ezrin, and John, in fact, had been the financial publisher of the books. He had financed the books. And he financed a man named Cy Bell, who was a printer. And with John's funding, they were able to, print, I think, six different titles on a weekly basis throughout the war and employ, hundreds of kids. Because at this point, most of the artists were kids. They were teenagers. And the oldest of the artists was Adrian Dingle, who was the art director for the books. But essentially, these books were done by young kids. And John was sitting in his warehouse on John Street, in fact, or actually it was Duncan Street. And I went to see him, and he said, yes, I do have these things. And then he took me to the back, and he showed me that he had boxes full of original art, boxes of acetate printing plates, and he had, complete sets of the comic books. So he was sitting on a treasure trove of this piece of history that by 1970 had been largely lost. Even though these books were very popular during the war, They disappeared at the end of the war, and so there was no, they weren't current, they weren't easily available. There weren't that many of the copies that were making their way to the comic book memorabilia stores of the day. So this was a tremendous opportunity. And at this point, John Esrin was not that keen to do anything with them himself, and he's actually looking to take them out of his warehouse and get rid of them. So he encouraged me to acquire them. And together with Patrick Lubert, the two of us bought the comic books, which gave us the rights to the books and gave us, you know, the archive. But we had no money. So Patrick's father sort of helped us out with some, with a short-term loan. But what we arranged to do was to sell the archives to the Museum of Man, which is now the Museum of Civilization in Ottawa. And so that archive of the comic books, the plates, the correspondence, you know, all of the sort of background material about these books is actually sitting in Ottawa. And our goal was to be able to fund the acquisition, but also to preserve the history, because there was an alternative route. We could have sold the artwork to collectors piece by piece, and we didn't want to do that because we felt that the story should be kept together, and it was this unique opportunity where one person had the whole story. And so, in fact, when the producers of a recent documentary done on comics came looking for information about the Canadian Whites, I was able to direct them to the archives in Ottawa. And in fact, they were able to film the archives and work with that. And one of those people working on that, the Lost Heroes documentary, is Hope Nicholson, together with Rachel Ritchie. And they have focused on republishing the Nelvana comic books, which they've done, and it's a terrific terrific thing to have done. So that those books now exist. And the way they got most of their comics was in fact by going to that archive in Ottawa, and that gave them access to nearly complete sets of the books. So the story has been preserved, and you know, is today available now in a lot of different ways. So I'm really happy to have been part of it then, and I'm happy to have this opportunity to help induct a number of the artists into the Hall of Fame, the Giant Hall of Fame. So the four creators who are being honored this evening represent the remaining living Canadian Whites artists, of whom there were more than 200 in total. All worked for the same comic book publisher, Bell Features, which had been based in Toronto. Three, Murray Karn, Mel Crawford, and Gerald Lazar, were Toronto boys who were born and went to high school there in the city. Jack Tremblay was born near Providence, Rhode Island, and his family settled in Montreal when he was 8. Murray Karn is the elder statesman of the Whites. He was born in 1923 and began working for Bell Features when he was 18 on Thunderfist in the first issue of Active Comics. Thunderfist was a superhero who could fly along telegraph lines and had a suit that gave him incredible punching power. Though Thunderfist was originally created by E.T. Legault, Karn took it over completely after 6 issues. Karn also created his own Jungle Jim kind of adventure called Jeff Waring in Wild Comics. Karn worked on these two characters until the fall of 1943, when at 20 years old, he was drafted into the Army. After the war, Karn returned to Bell Features to do a few more Jeff Waring strips, but when the Whites ended, he left for the States and a successful career in graphic art and later in fine art. He now lives on Long Island. Mel Crawford was born in September of 1925, and he began drawing for Bell Features in Joke Comics when he was 16. He worked on a series called The Three T's, about three teenage Canadian boys whose names all began with T, and who dealt with fifth column threats to Canada on the home fronts. Crawford also did a lot of the ad work for Bell Feature books at the time. Mel only worked for Bell Features for about 18 months and then joined the Canadian Navy in 1943 while he was still 17. After the war, Mel came back to Toronto and worked at BOMAC Engravers along with Gerald Lazar for about a year. In the late 40s, Mel left for the States to work for Dell Comics and is most famous for his prolific works on the well-known children's Golden Comic Books, Golden Book series. Mel settled in Connecticut and has had a great fine art career after retirement from his comic book work. Jack Tremblay, who I'm happy to say is with us today, was born on May 1st, 1926 in the U.S. and grew up in Montreal. His comic book career started when, at 15, he won a pair of roller skates in a drawing contest from Wild Comics. While still 15, he sent Bell Features in Toronto a fully finished story of a Canadian aviation ace he had created named Crash Carson. And he was thrilled to have it accepted and published in Wild Comics number 8, just at the time he was turning 16. He also created another war-themed comic book series called Wings Over the Atlantic for Commando Comics and worked on war posters for the government. In the fall of 1944, Jack signed up for the paratroop corps and was in the final stages of his training when the war ended. After the war, he became an accomplished illustrator, perhaps best known for his association with the writings of Gregory Clark, becoming Clark's artist of choice. In the 70s, he established himself as a prominent fine artist and has recently begun to work in digital art. His son, Rick Tremblay, is a successful illustrator and musician in his own right, working out of Montreal. Gerald Lazar, born in September 1927, grew up in the Junction, and as a teenager moved with his family to the Dufferin-St. Clair area, attending Oakwood Collegiate. He was hired by Bell Features just as he was turning 16 to take over the Jeff Waring strip after Murray Karn entered the Army. He would take his finished pages by streetcar every Friday down to the Bell Features offices on York Street and get them approved and paid for by Adrian Dingville, who was Bell's art director. Gerald went on to revive the female hero of the wing and take over Phantom Rider, where Rene Kulbach entered the Army. His own creations include Nitro, Bandleader, Crime Fighter, Grummy Young, and after the war, he came up with the Dreamer for the last few issues of Wild Comics. He was one of the most prolific of the early Canadian comic artists and was known for his speed in completing assignments without sacrificing quality. Art consumed Gerald Lazar's life, and after comics, he studied illustration with master illustrator Albert Dorn at his famous artist school in New York. He also traveled and studied in Europe and began illustrating books for children and young adults, as well as numerous magazine stories throughout the 50s and 60s. In the 70s, he taught at OCAD and began a career in fine art. Today, he is known for his wonderful city scenes and continues to work out of his home studio, which he shares with his talented artist wife, Cecilia. Adrian Dingle was the undisputed dean of the Canadian Whites. As art director for Bell Features, his initials often appear in the top corner of original art pages, approving them or asking for revisions. But he's best remembered for creating the iconic female character, Nelvana of the Northern Lights, from a story brought back from the North by a group of seven artists, Franz Johnson. He is also known for his magazine illustrations and has accomplished oil portraits and landscapes. He taught at art schools across Ontario and was affiliated with many artistic associations, including ARCA and the OSA, of which he served as president from 1967 to 1970. Adrian died in Toronto in 1974 at the age of 63. I was incredibly inspired by Nelvana, and together with Patrick LeBaron and our other partner, Fox Smith, we appropriated Nelvana to create an animation company, which we feel, you know, was inspired by this terrific creation. So once again, these were terrific artists who made a major contribution to Canadian comic art, and we're here to induct those individuals into the Giant Hall of Fame. The Giants of the North Hall of Fame. Gerry Lazar and Jack Tremblay, who are both here. Thank you. Chris Stengel is here and will accept the award on behalf of his father, Adrian. So if you could join us, please. Among them
where artists that subsequently achieved eminence and fame. Hepton Hassel is a well-known landscape painter. Healy Whelan, later Dr. Healy Whelan, is probably Canada's foremost post-classical and liturgical composer. My father was in there somewhere. These were all young, hard-working, high-energy, creative people. It was no surprise that when Franz Johnson, as you heard, brought that story of this old Inuit woman that was a healer and a spiritualist from his trip to the north, it's no surprise that these guys got together and morphed this into this young, glamorous superheroine that looked kind of like Hedy Lamarr and had amazing powers and could fly. Because that's what these guys were made of, and they did it extremely well. They also did it under a lot of pressure. My dad said to me that drawing Melvana enabled him to do two things. Day after day, producing whites under time pressure that needed to be fresh and full of action and to try new angles and new directions of the drawing. All of that, day after day after day, forced him to develop a drawing style that was easy and fluid and confident. And he took that into his later life as a fine artist, as a portrait painter, and as a painter of landscapes and figure studies. The second thing he said enabled him to do was to take full credit for the invention of the miniskirt, which took a great deal of pride in. I'm very grateful to Hope Nicholson and Rachel Ritchie for their incredible work producing this compilation of Melvana. It's beautifully done. It drips with passion and the kind of effort and work to put it together, and to put it together with such style and professionalism. It's wonderful to see Melvana back and all in one place. It's a terrific copy. It's being launched, I gather, as part of this festival that's currently going on. My father would be very proud to be associated with young Canadian cartoonists. And through this induction, so am I for being able to receive it on his behalf. Thank you very much.
For very casual. best book of the year is Michelle Rabagliati for All Writing
keeping this prize alive and promoting Canadian comics. This is a really great honor. I don't know what to say. It's just too much. I should have brought a shirt or something. Sorry for my clothing. So, but.
You want my jacket?
No. Doesn't fit me or you. So, thank you very much, everybody. So, have a good evening.
Thank you.
and